Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, and at Health and Wellness Australia and New Zealand, we specialise in providing a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT for short, which is performed by qualified naturopaths all over Australia and New Zealand. And today we're discussing a topic that comes up quite frequently with a lot of our PAT clients who are struggling with ongoing digestive symptoms such as bloating, food reactions, sensitivities, and they're not quite sure about what's actually driving the issues. So joining us today is our Melbourne naturopath and PAT practitioner, Lila DiQuinzio, who specialises in gut health in her private practice, and we're going to be exploring the connection between small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO, and these food reactions. So thanks again for joining me on the podcast, Lila.
Thanks for having me, Jess.
So most of us have experienced it at some point, that uncomfortable kind of bloating that makes you feel like you're 6 months pregnant.
Yes, absolutely. So when bloating starts to show up every day and starts bringing its friends, farts and weird poos, suddenly you're questioning every food and becoming wary of those genes. And then the frustration can sometimes only continue when all of the tests start to come back normal and you're given this IBS label and just sort of told to put up with it. But what a lot of people haven't heard about is a pretty common cause of bloating known as SIBO, or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And it is exactly what it says on the tin. It's that overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine where it shouldn't be.
And just to clarify for our listeners who are learning about SIBO, it's not necessarily about bad bacteria, is it? It's more about the location of the bacteria, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the large majority of our gut microbes very comfortably reside in the large intestine. So when the amount in the small intestine increases to a problematic number, they start to let us know about it by fermenting our food and producing some nasty gas, which leads to the bloating, flatulence, burping, stool changes, and other unpleasant experiences, both in the gut and other aspects of our health.
So building on that, how does this overgrowth actually develop? What tends to go wrong in the body for this to happen?
Yeah, so the causes of SIBO can be complex and multifactorial, but the gist is that the body has this master plan in place to prevent bacteria from gathering in the small intestine. But when those mechanisms falter, then SIBO can develop. So the two main methods of keeping SIBO at bay include a good amount of stomach acid and a strong cleansing wave that moves through the gut. So gastric juices like stomach acid, enzymes, bile, all responsible for restricting the foodborne bacteria from making their way into the intestines. And sometimes these digestive juices can be lacking. When we are stressed or taking medications like proton pump inhibitors, this can reduce their output, and that can be part of this issue. And then additionally, there's this periodic peristaltic wave called the migrating motor complex, or MMC, and that passes through the small intestine in between meals. And they've called it the intestinal housekeeper because it is this sweeping motion and helps to keep SIBO at bay by moving the bacteria towards the colon and helping to prevent this backflow.
Yep. And in your clinical experience, are there any common patterns that you see, like stress, medications, or other underlying conditions that can make someone more susceptible to developing SIBO?
Yeah, so stress and the proton pump inhibitors are a big factor because they can reduce that gastric acid. Also, if there are illnesses or structural abnormalities of the gut that affect motility, that can also really contribute to SIBO. So like hypothyroidism, like slowing down gut motility, diabetes, diverticular disease, hypermobility disorders, and even abdominal surgery. And also, as we age, both our motility and our gastric acid production slows down. So that can make us more susceptible to SIBO as well. And the research is also showing that it's more commonly found in people with certain health conditions. So that might be like IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, also Helicobacter pylori or H. pylori infection, obesity, liver disease, fibromyalgia, endometriosis has been linked to it, rosacea even, and dyspepsia.
Yeah, so there's quite a few comorbidities from the sounds of it. So I guess that explains why it is relatively common. So now let's talk about some of the symptoms, because this is often where people can start connecting the dots for themselves. What are some key signs for you that might indicate SIBO in one of your clients?
Yeah, so SIBO is a tricky beast, and it can really present itself in a variety of ways depending on which types of bugs are present and therefore which type of gas is being produced. So methane gas slows down motility and contributes to constipation, whereas hydrogen gas often causes loose stools. And it's also common to produce both gases and have mixed stools. But SIBO symptoms often also include bloating, particularly that really uncomfortable fullness just after you've eaten, and then other forms of gas, so flatulence, burping, as well as reflux, nausea, reduced appetite, gut pain. And we can also get even nutrient deficiencies and weight loss when it's been allowed to go on for longer.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think a lot of the time the nutrient deficiencies and the weight loss can be attributed to potential celiac disease. So it's interesting to hear there's a bit of lap over with the SIBO symptoms as well. And is there anything in particular about the timing of symptoms that can stand out, like how you said people feeling bloated after a meal?
Yeah, so because the small intestine kind of comes first before the large intestine travel through there, that bloating that's more immediate after a meal, say within the hour, that can sometimes be a bit more of a sign that SIBO might be at play. And then there can be some other signs as well that lead us to think about it a little bit more. So if somebody's reacting to really high FODMAP foods, that's what the bacteria like to consume the most. And they're really widespread. So it can be that person who feels like they're reacting to everything and they sort of can't figure out what the triggers are. Often going on to a low FODMAP diet, they can really have a lot of symptom relief. And sometimes that can be a bit more of a clue that testing for SIBO might be appropriate. And then sometimes if we have people who notice that probiotics worsen their symptoms, or fiber supplements or prebiotics in supplements worsen their symptoms, if their symptoms are improving when they're taking antibiotics, even if it's just for something else unrelated. And then there can be a few other things as well that might lead us just to think about SIBO a little bit more, like it's really linked to restless leg syndrome or having restless legs at night, B12 deficiency or iron deficiency, and gut issues that have started after some food poisoning or a bout of gastritis. And then also if someone has, again, that history of recurrent use of the antacids like the proton pump inhibitors or even antibiotics.
Yeah. And you mentioned that SIBO clients can often feel like they're reacting to every food they eat, regardless of what it is. Does this mean SIBO can also trigger food sensitivities or intolerances?
Big question, Jess. Yeah. So when gut symptoms are there, it can make it really difficult to understand what their origin is. Mm. Is it food intolerances or is it SIBO? We know that people with SIBO have those low tolerances for the FODMAP foods because they are those fermentable carbohydrates that really feed that overgrowth of bacteria. But whether we can blame food sensitivities on SIBO, that is a very complex answer. And the impact of SIBO on the immunity and the inflammation, there are a few ways that that can be linked to allergies and sensitivities.
All right. So let's start to break down each of the mechanisms. You have said it is complex, but let's start with the gut bacteria. So how does this gut bacteria imbalance contribute to the development of potential food sensitivities?
So because SIBO involves this excessive number of bacteria in the small intestine that are normally found in the colon, this can lead to this imbalanced gut bacteria that we call dysbiosis. And the role of the microbiome in allergies has really been quite widely studied now, showing that through multiple different pathways, the dysbiosis can reduce tolerance to foods and even lead to food allergies forming. So studies on the gut microbiome of infants have connected it to the development of allergies later in life. And factors like antibiotic use can also disrupt the microbiome and play a role in the development of both SIBO and allergic conditions like asthma and food allergies in childhood. And evidence has also pointed to a link between low microbial diversity, so a lower number of different species in the gut in early life, and the risk of allergies developing, which is a really good reason to consume a good variety of plant-based foods in the diet, or aim to, from an early age as much as possible, because the more variety we have in our diet in terms of plant-based foods feeds a greater variety of microbiomes in our of microbes in our gut, which is a protective factor for many reasons.
Yeah. And I think a lot of mums listening will be like, I know it is hard with toddlers.
That's the goal.
Yeah, that's the goal, of course, to work towards.
Yeah.
So essentially that bacterial imbalance or microbiome imbalance is affecting how the gut microbiome interprets the food. And then it can cause it to be something deemed as something that it needs to react to or protect the body from. And another term that comes up a lot when we're talking about gut health is leaky gut. So how does SIBO contribute to leaky gut?
Yes, good question. So firstly, the research has shown something interesting, that the overgrowth of bacteria associated with SIBO triggers this mucosal inflammation in the gut by increasing something called lipopolysaccharides, or LPS, levels. The LPS activates this cascade of type 2 inflammatory immune cells, which are the ones that are involved in allergic reactions. So that's an interesting link there. But then in addition to this, all of that local inflammation, it weakens these tight junctions between our gut cells, which form one of our best barriers against the world. And that's what we call leaky gut, when there are gaps in those cells. So that's also known as intestinal permeability. And it means that that LPS has created that LPS that has been created in the gut is now able to cross that barrier and move into systemic circulation and cause inflammation in other parts of the body, and particularly fueling that type 2 allergic inflammation.
Yeah, so I guess like it's not just the food particles and things like that that can allow to pass through the gut when leaky guts develop, but like you said, it creates that systemic inflammation. So our body's on high alert and really susceptible to developing these kind of reactions. And histamine is another topic that many of our listeners are becoming more aware of, as we do talk about it a lot on here. So where does histamine fit into this SIBO picture as well?
Yeah, so SIBO can contribute to that histamine overload that we've spoken about before. And it can do that in a few ways. It can allow an overgrowth of certain bacteria that like to produce histamine in the gut. And the damage from SIBO can also reduce our capacity to produce that diamine oxidase, DAO, enzyme that breaks down histamine and helps clear it from the body. So that can mean that we can have some histamine-induced food sensitivity symptoms like the headaches, sinus congestion, flushing, itchy skin, rashes, and also gut symptoms.
Yeah. So it's like you said earlier, where it just feels like they're reacting to everything, because I guess the inflammation levels are so high, there's sensitivities to the FODMAPs, which is in so many foods as well. And then we have to factor in that impact of histamine overload as well. So you mentioned earlier that the nutrient deficiencies can actually be a sign of underlying SIBO. Is that another contributing factor when it comes to the development of these food sensitivities?
Yeah, it can. Like I said, it's complex. So many different factors, and that can be another one. So SIBO can affect the absorption of nutrients in the small intestine. So again, it can take some time to get to that point. So if it's gone on a little bit longer, we can start to see iron and B12 deficiencies and even zinc. And these are all nutrients that are really important for immune function and gut integrity. So that can further impact our tolerance of foods and also make those symptoms a little bit harder to resolve until we can identify that and treat the cause and correct the deficiency too.
Yeah, you're right. This is a complex one. Definitely see how that combination of gut microbiome imbalances, the leaky gut, the histamine intolerance, and the nutrient deficiencies, it really just creates that perfect storm for developing food sensitivities.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it can. But also another thing to understand is that the connection between SIBO and food sensitivities goes both ways too. Mm-hmm. So while SIBO can trigger the food sensitivities through all these ways that we've talked about, the low-grade inflammation caused by the food sensitivities or allergies can also worsen gut symptoms. So that can create this cycle where the symptoms can become more persistent and a little bit more difficult to manage.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening along and nodding their head and feeling seen by the things that we're talking about, then it could be a good time to start investigating whether SIBO could be a cause or contributing factor to your symptoms. So where would you advise as the best place to start, Lila?
Visiting a GP or a naturopath or both who are well-versed in SIBO is a really good place to start. So not everybody is kind of across this completely. I guess we all sort of have our different areas of interest. Mm-hmm. But that person can really assess your symptoms and help prescribe the right testing. The gold standard for diagnosing SIBO is actually a small bowel aspirate culture, which happens when you have an endoscopy and they take a sample of fluid from the small intestine to measure the bacteria that are present. But thankfully, there is a much less invasive option available, which is just a breath test, which can be performed at home and sent away to the lab. So the breath test involves drinking a substance that the bacteria like to consume. Typically, it's lactulose. A lot of people get confused by that too, or glucose. And measuring the amount and type of gas that's produced over this 3-hour window as it's traveling from the through the small intestine to the large intestine. So a SIBO breath test that's higher in hydrogen is linked to a number of different bacteria like Klebsiella, even E. coli, Enterococcus, and can contribute to, as I mentioned before, like a diarrhea or loose stools or mixed stools, diarrhea and constipation in combination with the methane gas. So when there's a SIBO breath test result that's high in methane, that's often caused by a microbe classified as an archaea, known as Methanobrevibacter smithii, and that is more linked to constipation. So because, just a little side note, fun fact, because that's actually not a bacteria, it's an archaea, that type of SIBO has been reclassified and it's renamed to intestinal methanogen overgrowth or IMO. IMO.
Yeah, it's amazing that this testing method is available and it gives so much information to what's happening inside the gut and the body. So does a SIBO test need to be prescribed by a naturopath like yourself or through a GP, or what's the way to go about it?
It actually doesn't. You can self-order. Yeah. There are tests available on websites like SIBOtest.com. Mm-hmm. It can be good, though, to see a practitioner first, mm-hmm. because they can help guide you to which test to use, because there are a few different ones available, like I mentioned, with the different substrates that you need to drink. Yeah. But starting with a lactulose breath mm-hmm. test is usually just a good place to start.
Yeah.
But the results are not always straightforward to interpret. So it comes back with numbers and graphs, and they're not always a clear cut black and white interpretation. So I would definitely suggest speaking to a practitioner who really understands how to interpret it and how to treat it, of course.
Yeah, it definitely, it sounds like those results need a trained to be able to decide. Yeah. Sure. So once SIBO is identified for someone, what does a typical treatment plan look like?
Mm-hmm. So once it's been identified, the goal is really to target that overgrowth of bacteria and reduce that problematic number of organisms in the small intestine. So the bacterial overgrowth can be targeted with specific antimicrobial herbs and or a specific locally acting antibiotic called rifaximin. Rifaximin's a little bit more unique in terms of antibiotics. So it's non-systemic, which means that it can target the SIBO without having such detrimental effects on the larger microbiome like a typical antibiotic would. And then alongside that, a low FODMAP diet can be, or similar, can be used for the short term. That's never something we want to do long term, but just to help get the symptoms under control and the inflammation that comes with consuming all of those trigger foods.
The bloating and, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to make you feel better while we're treating it, obviously. But when we're having all of those symptoms, it's showing that there's inflammation occurring. So we also want to help reel that in while we're treating. And alongside all of that, it's also really important that we care for the whole gut. So we're using herbal and nutritional support for some of those causes we've talked about, so the gastric juices, the motility, and the microbiome at large. And they're really important parts of the plan. They really help the treatment to work better, and they protect the good bacteria in the gut. And most importantly, they're helping to target the cause, because if we're not understanding and addressing the cause, which can be really different for each individual, then as with all health conditions, if the cause goes untreated, the problem is pretty likely to recur.
And I guess a lot of us are learning more and more about gut health in recent years as well. And it really is a sort of a lifelong commitment to good gut health. Like, we're going to get little bugs, barley belly, all that kind of stuff. So it is about sort of, like you said, it's not maybe not just a quick fix once off. You need to keep on top of and address these underlying gut health issues as well. And one of the main feedback I get from a lot of our clients is that they do feel a bit overwhelmed with the potential of a SIBO diagnosis. So it's great to have this breakdown of exactly what they can expect. But would you have any further advice for anyone who may be feeling overwhelmed by the sounds of getting it tested and having to do this really full-on treatment plan? Like, how do you reassure your clients?
Yeah, it's a good point. Like, I'm not going to lie, it is a journey to go through, but it's worth it. Like, the diet restrictions, they seem really overwhelming, and they can be, but with the right support, it doesn't have to be that hard. And most people are keen. They're really willing to do it because they're sick of their symptoms, and they know that that's going to bring some relief. And when they start to get the relief, then that's the motivation to keep going for, you know, that short period that we need to address the SIBO. So working with a practitioner, I think, really has a lot of merit to it, and seeing that practitioner relatively regularly just to help support you, encourage you, keep you on track, provide those resources, make sure that you're not kind of you know, falling off the path, which can be easy to do. It's always good to have someone kind of holding your hand through it and guiding you along the way, and also helping to address any kind of like side effects that might come up, or, you know, little bumps along the way, or having someone to talk through that and just amend the plan as you go is like, that's what we're here for. That's our job.
Yeah.
And then it's just important to keep your eyes on the prize and really know that, you know, this is for a reason. You're going to feel better after this, and you don't want it to escalate into, you know, something worse.
Yeah. And I totally agree. I feel like we're bombarded with health information through Instagram, people using ChatGPT to get these prompts. And it's not individualized to what you need. And I think that's the difference when you do see a naturopath like yourself, it's you're giving that tailored advice and really helping them pinpoint what they need to focus on and getting back on track. So I can definitely see the value in it there. And
I think that is really important, particularly when it comes to SIBO, because as we've talked about, there are a variety of different causes. So they can be so different to each individual. And if you're not addressing them, then you're really not getting to the bottom of it properly. And I've had so many clients come to me who've done kind of like off-the-shelf protocols for SIBO and taken those, you know, some supplements you can order online. And a lot of the time they do feel better, but they're coming because it hasn't lasted. And as soon as they stop the supplements, all the symptoms have come back, or a month later, or whatever it is. And that's because nobody's worked with them one-on-one to address the cause and stop that from recurring. And that's the whole philosophy of naturopathy, is that we're looking at the individual and we're helping to address the root cause of the problem so that we can have more sustainable change.
Yeah. And I think I can totally see how it can feel overwhelming to look at this kind of, oh, I need to change my diet and do all these things. But like you said, a lot of us are getting supplements online or trying this new diet or trying that. It's sort of a lot more effort is going into that over years compared to working with someone one-on-one in a really targeted way.
Totally. In the end, it's a more streamlined approach. And that's why we always go for the testing.
Yeah.
As soon as we might suspect this, you know, if someone has the capacity for it, we'll look at testing, because we don't want to be guessing and trying different things and wasting time and wasting money.
Yes.
We just want to be able to identify and have a streamlined approach to get to the cause of it. And you're right, like in the end, that does save you quite a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So how can positive association technique, or PAT, be supportive alongside this SIBO treatment protocol and for longer term gut health as well?
Yeah, so because PAT helps retrain the body's response to allergens using that kinesiology, acupressure, and the positive conditioning approach, when the allergies and sensitivities, because they can trigger chronic inflammation and worsen gut symptoms and increase that histamine load and even contribute to leaky gut, while we're working on the SIBO naturopathically, the PAT can be just a really gentle, nice way to address those other reactions that are going on and contributing to that inflammation and histamine, like even if it's like pollen or dust mite allergies or grasses or cats, all of that's contributing to that load. So the PAT can be a really nice way to lighten that inflammatory load and really help reduce symptoms that weigh you down.
And I think, like you said, where it can be really beneficial is if someone is experiencing symptoms outside of the gut along with their gut symptoms, that can be that real indication that there's some histamine reactions going on, they've developed some sensitivities, that kind of thing. So I think that's where PAT can especially be really beneficial alongside for supporting the gut protocol. So before we wrap up today's episode, I think it's helpful to bring back to the bigger picture. So to our listeners who may be dealing with these multiple food sensitivities and ongoing symptoms, what would be your key message here?
It really pains me when people are just like cutting tons of food out of their diet because they're reacting to it and they're not working like to the why, which is incredibly hard to do by yourself, which is why, you know, working with a practitioner is so important. But cutting all of those foods out of your diet to help control your symptoms, it's not sustainable, because like we talked about, having a really diverse plant-based diet is so important for microbiome health and gut health, and more than that, overall systemic health. So having a diverse diet is always the goal. Yeah. So if you're reacting to lots of foods, the goal is not to stop eating them, but to try and really correct those underlying gut issues that's causing them. And that's where, you know, working with a naturopath can really help you get to the bottom of your symptoms for longer lasting results and ultimately food freedom.
Yeah. And I think that's key. Like, you want to be able to enjoy those naughty foods occasionally and not
totally
have a strict diet. Like, it's one of the best parts of life, amazing food. So it's
100% agree.
And IBS can be so debilitating. It goes just beyond these gut symptoms. I hear a lot about anxiety, about needing to have a bathroom nearby everywhere you go, it affecting your sleep, affecting your connections and relationships with people, and not being able to talk about it because it's a little embarrassing having diarrhea at times. Like, I totally get it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You're exactly right. It's so complex, and it affects us way beyond, you know, that odd bit of bloating. Mm. So it's definitely worth getting on top of.
Yes. Yeah. So if you're listening and recognizing yourself in this conversation, particularly if you have that ongoing bloating, you're reacting to multiple foods, or you feel like you're just getting symptoms that don't quite add up, it may be worth looking a little bit deeper to see what it is that may be driving that. So as we've discussed today, SIBO is one potential piece of the puzzle. And importantly, it's something that can be assessed and supported with the right guidance, like an amazing naturopath like Lila. So you can actually contact and book in to see Lila via her website, liladequinzio.com, and I'll also pop this in the show notes. Lila, you work in person and online, don't you?
Yes, that's right.
Perfect, yeah. So, and you can also learn more about positive association technique, or PAT, and see if it is right for you via our website, which is naturalallergytreatment.com.au. And if you just... And if you've enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to subscribe to the Natural Allergy Treatment podcast as well. And yeah, thank you for sharing your insights with us, Lila. I really look forward to the next time you join me on here.
Thanks, Jess. Me too.